My guest at this time is Texas Republican Congressman Blake Farenthold. He represents the Lone Star State's 27th Congressional District. Just last week, the House of Representatives approved an extension of the current interest rates for student loans that are scheduled to double come July. The president has been calling for that as well. The House Republicans have agreed to that. However, their method of paying for it is one that the administration and other Democrats don't agree with. So we're here now to talk with the congressman about what happened and what he expects to follow. And, sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, good to be with you. You know, we're caught up in the arcane world of CBO scoring. You know, you'd think that just extending an existing program wouldn't cost money, especially a program where basically we're just leveraging the federal government's credit rating to keep student loan rates low. But the CBO scored it out, and under the rules that the Republicans have adopted, we've got to cut somewhere else if we're going to spend some more money. And so we went after a slush fund in the president's health care law, and he's not too happy about any sort of raid on his signature law.
Well, let's follow up on that, because what you call a slush fund, of course, they call vital preventative health procedures, they say, particularly for women. So what makes this a slush fund and made it therefore vulnerable to being reduced to help pay for the loan rate extension?
It was a fund designed for a program that were not just preventative care in general. They hadn't been specifically allocated to where we were going to spend them on any particular program. They were just kind of sitting there waiting to be spent pretty much at a bureaucrat's discretion.
And so there was a 215 to 195 vote. There were about 30 House Republicans that did not vote for this, not because of where you were cutting spending from, but because they thought it probably wasn't a good idea to manipulate the interest rates if they were scheduled to rise. They figured that it's not the job of Congress to intervene. What did you make of their argument?
Again, I think a lot of it, they were concerned about the way the CBO scored it. But really, there's not a lot of cost in this. It's a loan guarantee program, and it's basically just leveraging the buying power or borrowing power of the government to keep those students' interest rates low. And, you know, clearly this was set up when previous Congress set it up to put it right in the middle of election year in an effort to create a tough choice for Republicans. But despite the Democrat narrative, I think the vast majority of the Republicans believe that education is important. We can get into some constitutional arguments about whether or not government should be involved at all in education. You don't find education mentioned anywhere in the Constitution. But if we want to have that argument, let's have that argument. Rather than just saying, well, we're only going to play halfway in this. Now, I might have voted a different way for saying, let's see what we can do about phasing out being involved in education.
It is an election year. It's 6 months till the election. Do you believe that if this vote was taken, say, 2 months after an election rather than 6 months before, that this is pretty much the same way the House would have approached it?
I actually don't. I don't think we play politics nearly as much as folks like to point out. Again, you know, this is really just leveraging the buying power. This isn't really spending as such. And I think most people voted their conscience election or not. I did have some constitutional reservations about it, as I said. But, if we're going to do it, let's do it right.
We're talking with Texas Congressman Blake Farenthold. And, sir, as you know, Democrats wanted to extend them as well. Their method of paying for it, though, was to raise payroll taxes on certain businesses, something that clearly Republicans are not interested, just as Democrats aren't interested in your payment mechanism. So what do you make of their approach, and is there any middle ground to be found here?
Raise taxes versus keep taxes the same or lower, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of middle ground. We've got a message of divisiveness on this whole tax issue. I think Republicans believe everybody's paying too much tax. We need to create a fairer, flatter, simpler tax rate, and not target the folks who are creating jobs. You know, a lot of the high-income folks that the Democrats are looking at targeting for these tax increases are subchapter S corporations where and pass-through entities where you run your business through your personal tax. And so even though you show high income, it's not money you're putting in your pocket. It's money that's flowing through your business and being spent and reinvested on employees and creating jobs.
Congressman, obviously the president has spent a lot of time talking about this issue on the campaign trail. He's visited a number of college campuses in the past few weeks. What do you make of his approach to how he's publicized this debate?
Well, again, the president is working on a policy of divisiveness. It's not that we don't have enough money in Washington, it's that we spend it. And the president's got to create all this rhetoric to talk about things because he can't run on his economic record. His policies have failed. I'll give him a win on Osama bin Laden, but I'm not going to give him a win on the economy and putting people back to work. He had us spend trillions in stimulus and wanted to do more, and we had to stop him. And the policies aren't working, and he can't run on his record.
You mentioned, sir, that you don't see a lot of middle ground between the two parties since one wants to raise taxes and one doesn't. So come July 1st, what's going to happen with student loan interest rates?
I think we'll find a compromise. Maybe we'll find somewhere else to cut it. Maybe they'll cave and realize that our kids are important to health care as well because they need to be educated so they can get jobs, have insurance, and some of them will work in the healthcare industry providing just the kind of care that this was designed to pay for.
Last question before we let you go, sir, on a different subject. You won one of the tightest races in the year 2010, beat a longtime Democratic incumbent, and that means you're one of the Democrats' top targets here in 2012. How's the reelection effort going, and what do you see as the keys to winning or losing come November?
Well, I got redistricted into a little bit more Republican district, so my chances are looking up. I've got three Republicans in a primary come the 29th, and I've got four Democrats vying to compete against me, at least one of whom I think's already had talks with the DCCC, which is a National Democrat congressional organization that funds campaigns. I think they're still mad at me for that win and are gonna give me a run for the money.
But your constituents, how are they reacting to your first year and a half?
I think I've done a great job. Take every opportunity I can to stay in touch with the folks back home. The guy I replaced stayed in Washington or traveled abroad on congressional trips. I come home almost every weekend. I do almost 5 hours of radio, both locally and on shows like yours every week. I'm committed to listening and doing what's right and what works for my constituents.
Well, a lot of big races, as you mentioned, the state of Texas next month. We'll certainly be watching yours as well. Congressman, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks.
Texas Republican Congressman Blake Farenthal represents his state's 27th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.